WEIL, Galesburg Radio 14, with breaking local news now.
Good evening, and welcome to tonight's forum, featuring candidates running for seats on the Galesburg District 205 Board. My name is Stephen Brody, and I'm the Executive Director for the Galesburg Area Chamber of Commerce. I will also be serving as moderator for tonight's forum. I would like to thank the Register Mail and WGIL for co-sponsoring tonight's event. To the candidates here tonight, thank you for being here to offer your vision for the city of Galesburg. Tonight's forum is being broadcast live on Public Access Channel 7, as well as WGIL. We thank the City of Galesburg for allowing tonight's forum to be held here in the Council Chambers at City Hall. To the audience members, we ask that you refrain from any public outbursts and allow all candidates the right to be heard and to have as many questions asked in the allotted time period. The format for tonight is as follows. Each candidate will have 2 minutes to present opening comments. Questions will then be posed by representatives of the three sponsors: Tom Martin, representing the Register Mail; Jim Lee, representing WGIL; and myself, representing the Galesburg Area Chamber of Commerce. Several of the questions to be asked have been received by each organization via social media, and we thank you for your participation. Candidates will have 2 minutes to respond to questions. At the conclusion, each candidate will have 2 minutes for closing comments. Our timekeeper tonight is Kelly Benowitz. Kelly will notify you when there are 30 seconds remaining and when time is up. And now, let's meet the candidates, beginning with Philip Slayton.
Good evening, my name is Phil Slayton, and as a high school science teacher, I'm more nervous than ever, I believe. I've lived in Galesburg for 22 years, and I'm married to Donna, who's a school psychologist for this district, and I have two children who graduated from GHS and have graduated from the University of Missouri. I spent 22 years in the Navy as a nuclear power operator on submarines, so I have experience outside of teaching. I took my degree from the University of Western Illinois University, and it's in biology, and I took my master's in physical science education from Eastern Illinois University. I grew up on the eastern side of Illinois and in a farming community that's similar to Galesburg. And after I retired from the Navy, I moved to Galesburg so I could attend Western Illinois University. And so anyway, I am presently a physics and chemistry teacher at Orion High School. And the reason why I'm running for the board is because I think Galesburg District still provides one of the best quality educations of any school district in the area. I think they have excellent teachers, and so I would like to help continue that. Also, with the state's financial problems, I would like to I'm pretty analytical, so I think I can make good decisions about how to spend our money. And I would also like to be instrumental in bringing a little bit more communication and trust into the board for the community and for the teachers in the schools. And thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Slayton. Our next candidate is Tiana Cervantes, and forgive me for saying Mr. Slayton's a candidate in the Galesburg Township race, as is Tiana Cervantes. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Tiana Cervantes. I am a resident of Galesburg, born and raised here in Galesburg. I am running to help bring the focus and goal of our district back to educating all of our students. I want to help rebuild the relationship in our community between parents, students, teachers, administration, and the community at large. And with that goal in mind, I hope to bring a different perspective to the board. As a higher education professional working at Knox College, I am aware of the importance of K-12 education in preparing students for college. I am on the receiving end of balancing state and federal regulations and requirements with students' growth and development. So I am aware firsthand of the dedication and passion necessary for teachers to have and work in this field. As a parent, I want to know that my child and the children of all of parents in this district, their interests are at the forefront of the decision making of this board. And those are the reasons that I'm running. Thank you for inviting me tonight.
Thank you. Our next candidate for Galesburg Township is Wayne Statham.
Good evening. My name is Wayne Statham. I grew up here in Galesburg, and I'm a graduate of Galesburg High School. After Galesburg High School, using the education that I was provided here, I was able to go on to Illinois State University, receive my bachelor's degree, and after that go to the University of Illinois College of Law, where I received a law degree. I then married Lou Ann Statham, who is a counselor at Galesburg High School. Together we raised two children here in Galesburg. Our oldest is Zachary, who is a second grade teacher at South Pekin Elementary School. And our youngest is Natalie, who is currently a senior at Illinois Wesleyan University. I am a founding member of the law firm of Statham & Long here in Galesburg, which is a five-attorney law firm located, as I said, here in Galesburg. As part of my law practice, I represent various cities, villages, fire protection districts, and library districts here in Western Illinois. Part of that practice involves advising the boards on issues such as municipal finance, tax appropriation ordinances, tax levies, and basically all issues, including labor relation issues. People ask me constantly, once I declared that I was going to run for this position, why are you running? I think the answer is easy. I'm running because I'm a strong advocate of public education, and I want to take this opportunity to give back to the school district, which has provided me, my wife, and my two children with a quality education. I think my professional background gives me a unique experience to sit on this board. I also think I'm in a unique position to help, as Ms. Cervantes said, rebuild relationships between the board, the administration, the teachers, and the community at large. And if elected, that's what I hope to do.
Thank you very much. Next, we'll hear from the candidates running for the district for the seat, for the outside Galesburg Township seat. And our first candidate is Amy Pickerell.
Thank you. My name is Amy Pickerell, and I am not from Galesburg. I've lived here for 14 years, but I'm from Carmel, Indiana. I am the mother of two children who are currently attending an elementary school in the district. My husband is a Galesburg native, which is why I landed in Galesburg and making our family roots in Galesburg. I started to decide, thinking about running for school board last spring. I decided that I wanted to try to make a change. I know there are struggles in this district, and I want to try to improve many things. My daughter said it best to me this morning on our way to school when I was dropping her off. And she questioned why I wouldn't be home tonight, and I explained to her I had a meeting again. And she said, Mom, and she's eight, I know why you're doing this. You're doing this so you can help the kids. And in a basic form, that's why I'm doing this, is to help the kids. Communication, of course, needs to be open, and I hope I can help do that.
Thank you. Our next candidate is Jean Ann Glasnovich. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Jean Ann Glasnovich, and I'm a write-in candidate for the school board for outside of Galesburg Township. I earned a bachelor's degree in education from Eastern Illinois University and then a master's in counseling and student personnel, also from Eastern. My family consists of my husband, John, who is a former GHS social studies teacher for 34 years. I have a son, Ryan, and a daughter, Erin, both graduates of District 205. And I have two granddaughters who will soon be attending Galesburg schools. I retired from District 205 in 2011 after over 25 years of service. I was a counselor at Galesburg High School for 20 years and also served as an outreach worker in four different elementary schools in the district for about 5 years. and also worked as a first grade reading aide at Gale for 3 years. I'm running because I think that we all must come together in the Galesburg community to focus on the number one priority, which is providing the best possible education for all of our students. I have the temperament, I believe, professional and personal qualities which are well suited to collaborating with a team to meet this challenge. My professional life has been one where I've had to handle crisis situations, mediate conflicts between diverse groups, focus on goals, lay out options, and help guide individuals toward their best choices. I have time to devote to research and study that's necessary to provide input toward good common sense decisions. And I also have a great desire to help the community and the district move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. And our final candidate is Mr. Maury Lyon. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I am also a write-in candidate for the area outside Galesburg Township. I'm a long-term resident of the community. We've been here, it'll be 30 years in August. We came here when our oldest son was just beginning kindergarten, and he went to Silas Willard for a short while. We had four children and went through the schools. And they're all doing nice things right now. So the schools have done well for them. But I think we can do better. I firmly believe we did better. So what brings me in terms of training to this spot? Well, we came to Galesburg for a position here in the schools. I worked as an administrator in the district for 25 years. I was at Cook School initially. While at Cook School, we applied for and received a grant to start the preschool program, which I worked with for the next 25 years at various locations around the community. So we've been at community sites, we were at Stone School, I almost forgot the name, and then we were at Lincoln for the past 7 years. I also worked as a principal at Steele during my time here in the district as well. I've attended probably over 300 school board meetings, and I think I've stayed awake in every one of them. So I do have some experience in all them. Is that not correct? I think I bring something a little bit different because I bring some institutional memory in terms of the district. I'm concerned that right now we're going to have a board with four new board members. We have a new superintendent and a new business manager. I believe there's a need for some board personnel to have some ideas on the processes of the district, some past problems we've had in the district, and past ways we attempted to remedy them, possibly unsuccessfully, and how we can do differently. So you have an opportunity to hear more, but thank you for the opportunity to be here now.
Thank you. Now our first question will be asked by Tom Martin, representing the Register Mail. Tom.
Thank you. And this question will go to all the candidates, and we'll start with Maury Lyon. District 205 and Galesburg Education Association reached a contract agreement after a 15-day strike in August that included a school year shortened by 6 days. Would you have voted for this contract, and why or why not?
When I voted for the contract, I was extremely disappointed that the school year was shortened. I'm not sure everyone understood the implications of that at the time. I'm not sure, I know everyone that get back to school, but I haven't answered the question. Would I have voted for it? In the heat of the moment, maybe I would have. After reflecting, if I would have had the night to think about it, I probably would not have. And I hope I would have had the ability to think through and look at that process as not something that's good for the students to shorten the school year. And as it turns out, to also build a calendar that didn't have any emergency days built into it. It was a poor decision. My assumption, it was put together in a manner that all the implications were not well known. But I wasn't privy to the process, so I can't speak directly to that. But I do think we need to change the process a little bit more. No one wins in a strike. I think we had a good example of that this year. It was distressing for teachers, for staff, for board members, and for the larger community. There must be some other way we can handle labor issues to deal with them. Some of the issues that I heard were being spoken of, I can't believe can't be dealt with outside the contract process, earlier in the term of a contract. I mean, it just wasn't a good process. It turned out poorly for the children. It turned out extremely poorly for all the stakeholders in the community. If there's some way we could have done differently, I hope it could have happened. So directly, I hope I would not have voted for it, but I can't say that.
Thank you. Jean Ann Glasnovich, would you like me to repeat the question?
No, that's okay.
Okay. Would you have voted for that contract, and why or why not?
Well, I think there were really two issues. There was the contract and then the return to work agreement. The contract, I wasn't in the room, so I don't know all the back and forth. I'm not sure that the contract itself was considered on the part of either side a bad contract. Like I said, I wasn't in the room. So I may have voted for that. If I felt that the contract was the best thing for students and the best thing with regard to students' education in District 205, then I probably would have voted for it. I would not have voted for a work agreement. I would not have been in favor of a return to work agreement, I mean, where there were students' days docked. I think that could have been avoided completely. We've only had two strikes in almost 160 years in this district. The first one was in 1977. We were out for 4 days and then came back, and there was no question, I don't believe, that we were all going to go and work the full contract, the full number of days, which is important because it's students' education, and that's why we're there. Another district in the state of Illinois, Waukegan, was out for 20 days, and that was into one quarter of the way into the school year, and they were able to put all the days back in. So I believe it could have been done. So a short answer is no, I would not have voted for the return to work agreement because I don't think that was good for the city, for the community, for the students, for the Board of Education. And I would hope that, and I was happy, very happy to see a couple of board members come forward and admit that they felt that they'd probably made a mistake. I admire them for doing that. I know that was not easy to do. But each board member only gets one vote, and a majority does rule. And I would hope that I would have been persuasive enough to convince the remaining board members that the return to work agreement was not a good idea. Thank you.
Thank you. Amy Pickrell, would you have voted for that contract that included the shortened school year?
I have to say, not being in the room, not knowing negotiating, not knowing anything as a parent that was going on, I was ready for my kids to be back at school, plain and simple. But at the same time, I know there are other issues. But again, as a citizen of the community and as a parent, I was not aware of every fine detail, and I believe there's a reason for that, and that's why I'm running for school board, is to learn more and learn as I go. Each time, you know, you go to a meeting, I attended several meetings, and I respect the board members for what they had to go through. Respect the GEA for what they went through. Student learning should be the number one priority. Sad they are going to miss some days of school, but would I have voted? I don't know.
Okay. Just in case somebody just tuned in, I will repeat the question. The District 205 Board and Galesburg Education Association reached a contract agreement after a 15-day strike in August that included the return to work agreement, included a school year shortened by 6 days. Wayne Statham, would you have voted for this contract, and why or why not?
Well, again, as Jean Ann said, when you say the contract, I'm going to separate them as two separate issues. There was the contract that was negotiated for the next few years between the district and the GEA. That contract, yes, I would have voted for. In any situation where you have an employer with a lot of employees, there are going to be labor issues. And I admire the fact that the GEA and the board sat down. I think they did it more slowly and more acrimoniously than I would have ever desired to see occur. But they did sit down and they negotiated a contract that I think both sides were happy with in the end. What disappointed me was once they reached an agreement, the board then decided to take a punitive approach toward the teachers and the GEA. And instead of saying, we reached an agreement, let's move on, let's move forward, let's join together and work together for the best interests of students, the board decided to take a punitive approach to try to teach their employees never to do this again. And I think that was an absolute wrong approach to take. Would I have voted for the return to work agreement that was presented? It's hard to answer that completely because it's better than the original proposals that were made by the board. But I think even the last proposal is something the board actually should have been ashamed of. I will not take the approach that once I reach an agreement with my employees that we're going to move forward and try to work together, that I'm going to punish them. That's not something I would have done. The other interesting thing is I keep on hearing the statement, well, the teachers agreed to it. How can you criticize that the teachers agreed to it? No, they chose the least bad alternative. It's kind of like saying, if I'm given a choice by someone, I'm going to cut off one or two fingers. And I say, well, then just cut off one. I don't want to hear somebody later say, well, he agreed for me to cut off his finger. And that's the analogy I would draw to this return to work agreement. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Tiana, would you have voted for the contract with the return to work agreement? Why or why not?
I think that it's a hard question to answer because hindsight is a gift. You know, for those of us that are on the outside and we're not privy to the conversations and it was not our livelihood that was on the line, it's easy for us to sit back and question what we would have done. As a single parent, I may have had to vote for it. I may have felt the pressure to return to work because I have a household that I have to take care of. But I don't know that it would have been with a fully agreed heart or mind that I would have agreed to sign that. I think that a better question that we should be asking ourselves is whether or not the board could have made a different decision with that return to work agreement. Ultimately, that's what we're up here running for. I'm not applying to be a teacher in the district. I'm up for election for the school board. And as a board member, I agree with Mr. Statham. We have collective bargaining rights for a reason. It's so that employees can protect themselves in the workplace. And we as board members have to take that seriously. We have to understand that their jobs are important to the work that we do as board members in moving this district forward and along. And so we need to understand and have a collaborative work relationship so that we're all able to do that. And that's educate our children in this district. So I think that's the better question to ask ourselves. If we were a board member in that room, is that the agreement that we would have put forth to the GEA? Thank you.
And that actually is the question. I'm asking you as a board member.
Yeah, I would not have.
Okay. All right. Philip Slayton, would you have voted for this contract with the shortened school year?
I would not have voted for it because I feel like it was punitive. But I would say that there's some factors that may have entered into that because the board has been under a lot of pressure this year because they've closed Cook School. They've taken a lot of abuse over the football field. They've started construction on Silas Willard. They planned some high school updates. They went through a strike and there were hard feelings. And they hired a new superintendent from after the old one quit. So I think with that pressure, it's hard to say if you're under the same circumstances how you would do. But here, the other points I'd like to make is I think the contract was fair, but I'm kind of like Mr. Statham. It was a punitive thing to take the 6 days away. And the other thing that's happened to the district is that we've lost 6 days due to park testing. So with the 6 days that are gone due to starting the year or taking the days away, plus the 6 days we lost to park testing, we lost 12 days of school this year. And the kids lost those days, and I think that's wrong. So I think the district or the board is actually guilty of having penalized the students more than anything else. And that's what we're trying to do is teach or is provide an education for those kids. So.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Jim Lee, representing WGIL. Jim.
We'll start on this side with you, Philip, for this question. We thought we might talk about curriculum for a little bit. There have been many concerns expressed by parents and teachers nationwide and within the state of Illinois regarding the Common Core state standards that are being used in our schools. Some of the positives have been that it creates critical thinking, problem solving, and analytical skills. Some of the negatives have been many think that it involves over-testing. It's creating some teaching difficulties for our district and others. And so my question would be, do you support Common Core? And if not, what changes might you recommend to curriculum to make it better?
I have mixed feelings on the Common Core, and the reason why I do is because I think the intent of Common Core is to provide students with a better education so that they can better compete in the job market and in college and so on. I know as a teacher I've been tasked with trying to reorganize my teaching plans and so on. So it's really put a lot of pressure on the teachers to perform at a higher level. And it's not that we don't want to perform at a higher level, it's just that it's eating up a lot of the time that we are trying to teach kids, and so that's part of the problem. And the other thing is, with the 6 days that we're losing due to the testing, we've actually lost a full week of instruction, so I don't think that's good. They keep nipping a little bit every year. They keep nipping a little bit more every year off the schedule. We'll add one more day of testing. We'll add one more day for the ACT. And surely, slowly but surely, they've nipped it down to where we don't have too many days to play with anymore and to be able to say we teach a full year and give a quality education to our kids. And I don't think that's right. So do I have an answer for whether the Common Core is going to be successful? I'm hoping that teachers embrace it, because if they don't, it's not going to help the kids. However, I understand the pressure they're under because I'm a teacher. So I think that's all I would say on that, and thank you.
Okay, thank you, Philip. Tiana Cervantes, Common Core obviously is here. Do you support Common Core? And if not, what changes do you see that might be better?
I think it's a question of intent versus impact. The intention of the Common Core is a good one. It is supposed to allow for students across the nation, no matter where they live, or maybe move to across the nation or within neighborhood schools, that they're not going to have the challenge of being behind in the new school that they attend. The impact, though, is always the crutch, right? Because federal government, state government funding being what they are, these new policies are never really fully resourced. And that's where you have the teacher concern and the parental concern, because if we're adding days of testing and we're not giving the professional development that teachers are asking for in understanding how to apply this guideline to their classroom and still have the creativity to do what they love, then of course there's going to be some tension, there's going to be some pushback, because I believe that teachers went to school for a reason, and they're experts of their classrooms. So I believe it's a question of intent versus impact. On principle, yes, I agree with Common Core. But if we cannot find a way to support our teachers in the classrooms and cannot find a way to give them the professional development or the support needed to fulfill what the Common Core is, then it's defeating the purpose.
Thank you. Wayne Statham, your thoughts on Common Core, and what recommendations might you make for changes if needed?
Well, as Tiana said, and I would agree, the intentions behind Common Core are, I would fully support. As you mentioned yourself in your question, it's aimed at allowing students to engage in critical thinking and take what they're learning and apply it to more real world situations. And it does that in the fields of language arts and math primarily, and literature. And I like the idea, as Tiana said, that if we can make this successful, that every child attending public school, no matter what zip code he's attending school in, will get a similar education to the same standards. And as Tiana also said, and if one child moves from school to school, and mobility of students is a huge issue locally and nationwide, these are all laudable goals. A few of my concerns I have about it though are, number one, as everybody's going to mention, the heavy reliance on testing. It's led to not only reliance on testing as the sort of almost sole scoring mechanism whether or not it's succeeding, it's led to duplicative testing, and it's led to our students being the most tested students in the industrialized world. We're the only country that tests our students in every grade, 1 through 12. And Common Core concentrating on just a couple subject matters has led to a de-emphasis on the arts, history, sciences, geography, physical education. What would I do if I had a chance to improve Common Core? I would make it less reliant on its measures of success on testing. And I would look to see that there are other areas that are important, and I would let everyone know that the measure of a good teacher is not just test scores, and to make sure that we don't over-rely on Common Core test scores in evaluating our educational system or our teachers.
Okay, thank you, Wayne. We move on to Amy Pickrell. Amy, you said you have several young students right now, and I've read that Common Core, they say, really probably won't be fully assessed until about 12 years when students have moved all the way through the system. Tell us your thoughts on Common Core.
At first, when I heard of Common Core, I also heard the frustrations and the scare from parents. I have many friends who, you know, we're beginning in this. We're beginning in our school years for our children. I'm in the school every day, and talking to teachers, Common Core seems to stress them out. It seems to make them on a place where they don't feel creatively content, and it's a hard adaptation for this. But I believe anytime you have any kind of change, it is hard to adapt. It's hard to get in your groove right away. I think with anything, we are progressive and we are trying to move forward, and like the others have mentioned, being preparing kids for the education they choose to continue to get, or their vocation, their career, is important. With the park, I believe many current states, they test and they measure only lower level skills. I think the new assessments serve as an educational GPS system, assessing students' current performance and pointing the way to what students need to learn by graduation so they are ready for college and or a career. I believe the park assessments give schools and teachers more information to improve instruction. Moreover, park lets parents know how their child is progressing academically. And I believe this aligns with the more rigorous Common Core standards. And it's, like I said, it's scary, but it's just what we do. And I'm nervous for my kids when I can't show them how to do a math problem because it's different now, but I might not have been able to show them anyway. So this could just teach me new ways of doing things. Like I said, change is scary, but it's something we adapt to and do.
Thank you. Thanks, Amy. Jean-Ann Glasnovich, obviously Common Core is a big topic in a couple of minutes. Your thoughts on Common Core, and if you are not in favor, what you might think was a better alternative?
Well, before we had Common Core, we had No Child Left Behind, and that sounded like a great idea, and all students were going to be by 2014 at 100%. And I think as educators, we all realized that was, although we always strive for the top, we realized that not all students can necessarily get to that point. As a counselor who would see students come in from various parts of the state and the country, and those students had been on the honor roll, doing very well at their school, wherever it might have been, and then they would come to Galesburg High School and start to flounder, and the parents would come in, I don't understand, he was always on the honor roll, you know, what's wrong? So the part of trying to make everything leveled out so that a kid in Arkansas in geometry, the halfway through geometry, is about the same place that a kid in Illinois is in geometry if they were to transfer, or from a Chicago school to Galesburg. that's all, those are all good ideas and those are good goals to go forward with. I am concerned also that it is only going in only one area, two areas, I'm sorry, math and the English language arts. But the expectation with that is that English and language arts and reading and all of those, that's going to be across curriculum that's going to be studied. I think there are probably, I've heard from teachers that some say it's not too bad, but what they're having difficulty with is they're not getting the support. They're not getting the resources and the information that they need from the curriculum to help them. It's all very new to them, and I think they're stressed out with regard to the testing. I talked to a veteran teacher who said, I'm not going to stress out. I'm just going to teach my kids, and then they will be ready. And I think that as a school board, if we could set the tone that this is not high-stakes testing and this is not going to be what we are going to be grading you all on, but that we need it for our kids and to see how they're doing. So there's good and bad, as with all things, and we must move forward and do with it the best we can.
Okay, thank you, Jean-Ann. And finally, Maury Lyon, obviously, you're like a lot of us. You were taught 2 + 2 = 4, and that's that. The Common Core is a little more deep thinking in some of its ways.
I think 4 is still the answer, though. I'll check, but I think 4 is still the answer. A math teacher in the audience tells me I'm correct. That's good. The Common Core provides a map. We all need a map. We can't find anywhere, go anywhere without it. When I came here in 85 to the district just had a new superintendent had come up with all these new curriculum issues and guidelines for how to teach things, and it was shared from one level to another, and it really wasn't very good. I'm sorry, sometimes you do things in-house, you don't have the best resources to do it. As I have viewed the Common Core, and I was, my last year working in the district, I had to do a workshop for kindergarten teachers, so I got involved in it at that level. It was good stuff. I think it's good. It's a good map. It does not tell people how to teach, though. The artistry of the teacher is still there. All curricula, except for those that are fail-proof, supposedly, which never work, leave to the artistry of the teacher to figure out how to teach well. And I think the Common Core still can lead to that. I'm more concerned about Common Core disappearing because people have taken it as a political football now and saying, oh, it's federal intervention, it's state intervention. It's neither. It was an independent agency. It came out of a coalition of states who wanted to be interested in having something good for children. A good map is better than no map. And it's a good map will help you get places well. So I think if we can stick with it, and have the resources to have people understand it well and free them to use the artistry of their own teaching for it, it can be very good for our students. Of course, as we've said, the testing becomes a serious issue, and high-stakes testing has no place in any school ever.
Thank you. The next question will come from myself. Workforce development is an issue heard from many of my colleagues in the Chamber of Commerce, Chambers of Commerce throughout the state of Illinois. Employers say that they have jobs available, but that there are not enough skilled employees in the area to fill those positions. And in addition, positions remain open oftentimes because applicants cannot pass a drug test. What should the relationship be between the schools and the business community? And what steps do you believe can and should be done to prepare students for entering the workforce? And we will begin with Maury Lyon.
Well, some behavior, the minimal behaviors we want for all employees are the same that we want for students. So if we can make sure they can learn those as students, they'll be way ahead in the workforce. For example, we expect people to show up on time. And on time doesn't mean 5 minutes later, on time. What kind of organization do we have in schools that require that of students to make them know that it's important? We want them not only be on time, but be there regularly. The district, a number of years ago, went into had encouragement for students to always be in attendance. We should always encourage that. If any employer wants the same employees there every day and on time, most employers will work with people beyond that if they can show up. But I'm not saying they don't have skills. Let's get to the skills that student that they would want. We need to have in our schools the ability for people to be well-trained. Does training mean the same as education? I think it does. Some students will go on to college. Do we have them, are they well-prepared for that? I hope so. When our oldest went to college, he felt very underprepared. It was not a very good situation when he went off to college. His first two terms were very difficult for him. But I think Galesburg High School is a much more academic institution than it was 18 years ago, whatever it was when he finished, 16 years ago. But then there are other students who aren't going to go to college or going into the military. They still need to show up on time. They still need to be there all the time. We also need to have the ability for them to have experience with work that's useful to the workforce. I read recently about the 3D printers the high school has. I'm glad to hear that. That's what the expectation is. We need to be able to have students aware of they're going to find in the workforce. Thank you.
Thank you. Same question for Jean Ann Glasnovich. What should the relationship be between the schools and the business community here in Galesburg, and what can the schools do to prepare students for entering the workforce?
Well, beyond just the book learning, thank you very much. Beyond just the book learning, there are a lot of other skills that are necessary, and I do think that attending a public school or a private school, there is a social activity that helps provide students from the kindergarten level all the way up through that to prepare them essentially to work in a workforce, to be able to get along with others, to work together as teams, to understand structure, to understand, you know, there are rules that have to be followed, that you've got a boss and the teacher or whoever that might be. So those are important skills just beyond, you know, learning the math and the science. Learning to be analytical thinkers, learning to put together projects and solve a problem. Several years ago, Dr. Cope had brought in a woman, Mary Andrews, who was a workforce place coordinator. And that was a long, that wasn't even the full name of it, but she was a kind of a liaison between the businesses in town and the school. And she would bring in businesses to Galesburg High School, and she would bring them in. We would have lecture rooms full of kids who would listen to somebody from Mid-State Manufacturing. And the counselors would go to visits through Maytag, so that tells you how long ago it was at that point in time. So that was really an excellent way to bring the businesses to the kids, and then the kids in turn were able to go out to the businesses. We took visits through the various vocational programs at Sandburg, and Sandburg would come and talk about those programs. So I think, as in all these things, there needs to be a collaboration between the business, and if we could get the businesses to come in more and tell us what they need from us and the kind of workers that they need. Maury's right. Show up at time, show up every day, be able to get along with other people, with your coworkers, with your administrator or with your bosses. Those are all skills that are very important, and that's what we all have to work for.
Thank you. Amy Pickerel, same question. What do you see as the relationship between schools and the school district and the business community, and how can the schools work to help equip a good workforce here in the area?
Along with the arriving on time, both my children know exactly when they arrive at school, they're ready to learn. They have a motto they say at school, and they are learning that. My son's in kindergarten from day one. So that's just an important skill, and I think as they get older, skills build on that. As far as the community, when I was in high school, I mean, alumni came into the school and had lunch sessions and went over what their choices were, whether it was a vocation or a college. It's preparing students and letting them know what's out there. I'm sure many students are aware of what's out there, but some just kind of need a little bit of wisdom or a little bit of guidance as to what they can choose to do. And I think a strong relationship with Sandburg is important going forward, whether that's, you know, again, students coming in and speaking with high schoolers or even junior high level. I think it's important to know what directions they have available to them.
Great, thank you very much. Turning over to our other set of candidates, Wayne Statham, Same question, you know, the relationship between the schools and the business community, you know, how should that be, better, worse, improvements, and what can be done to prepare students for entering the workforce?
Well, there's a couple questions there. Number one, the school district has to seize on all opportunities possible to partnership with the local business community for a lot of reasons. One of the reasons is, as you said in your question, to seek input on what it is we're doing right and what it is we're not doing quite so right in preparing students to enter into the business world. I'm a business person. We will interview people for positions, and I know the concerns businesses have on the skill sets that people graduating from high school have. It's funny, we were asked a question earlier about Common Core, and that exactly was one of the goals of Common Core, was to help students acquire knowledge and learn how to use that knowledge in more real-world settings. It was your concern that led to Common Core. As I said before, my concern about Common Core was we're supposed to measure its success by standardized testing. Measure of our success is to reach out to businesses and say, how are we doing? What is it you're looking for? How can you help us teach our students those skills? I think we're offering a quality education, but I think there are areas that we could improve upon, and I think the board, the curriculum director, the superintendent, the principals, and ultimately the teachers need to know what particular skills can we work on more to more prepare students to enter into the workforce. Not every student's going to college. I think we happen to be doing an excellent job of preparing students for college, but I think we need to more prepare those students who are going directly into the workforce, partnering with businesses, particularly helping to offer more vocational programs, the skills that they're particularly looking for. It's a great opportunity that needs to be seized upon.
Thank you. Same question to Tiana Cervantes. What do you see as the relationship between the school district and the business community, and how to better train the students for the workforce?
It's extremely important. Working at Knox, it's one of the things that I've learned that Knox does well. In fact, I teach a course part-time at Knox in which that's what I do. I connect college students with nonprofit agencies in Galesburg, and that's what they're doing. It's a 5-hour a week work job, and they're just simply learning how to use the education that they've received in a professional setting. First-hand knowledge and learning as doing is great, and so why not create partnerships for some of our students in high schools to shadow some of our business leaders or some of the vocational positions in our town? Because sometimes students just don't know what all is out there. Well, I'm going to school and I'm learning, but how do I use this? What do I put this, you know, to do? And so maybe creating some abilities for them to shadow. Or maybe we use days off from school and ask Sandberg to put together vocational information days so that students can go out there and they can learn about the different vocational certifications that they can receive. Or maybe we do a career fair on a day off and we invite local businesses to come in and do informational interviews and talk about, here are some things to keep in mind when you're in high school or when you're looking at what you're going to do after high school. Some of the key things that we as business owners are looking for: professionalism, not just about being on time, but how do you communicate verbally, written, and through email nowadays. And so those are some ways that we could use days off possibly. I think it's just about creating those relationships and making sure that our students are getting firsthand experience.
Thank you. Philip Slayton, same question. The relationship that you see between the school district and the business community, and what the school district can do to help better prepare students in case they don't go into college right away and they do want to enter the workforce. What can the school district do to assist with that?
I believe that there's been I would call it an abdication of parents from actually guiding their children as much as they used to, because we have a lot of cases, two parents are working, so they get home late, they're tired, and they don't oversee the kids like they used to do. And because of that, you'll see kids that are using vulgarity at the age of five, and there's just a lot of disrespectful behavior that's come out because there's nobody guiding them in the right way. So as far as their relationship to business, I think we need to start with the principalships in the school, because they're the ones that are going to ensure timeliness. They're going to ensure the correct behavior, the correct language, and teach skills that the kids are going to need to communicate with a business. I think one thing that might help would be that we could take the businesses and bring the experts in from those places and talk to the kids and say, these are the things I want you to have if you're going to come to me as an employee, and give them more guidance, because sometimes I think they listen to a counselor and the counselor is trying their best to convince them that that's what's right, but it's not as meaningful as when you see a businessman walk in there and say, this is what I need from you. I think we need to empower our parents better, because I think a lot of parents they're resource strapped right now. They don't have money, they don't have a car, they don't have some of the things they need to ensure that their kids get to school on time. And when those kids are truant, they don't learn well, and they don't learn respect. So in addition, I guess I could say counselors can help more, but I think counselors work hard to try to give as much guidance as they can. And so I guess we can say they can do better, but, and the last thing I want to mention is, I think vocational pursuits have been kind of put as a second class way of employing yourself. They're not the same. Everybody thinks you got to go to college in order to make a living, and that's not true. I had a boy come to me the other day, and he says, I'm going to be a welder when I leave school this year. And I said, that's great. He says, I'm not going to school. He says, I'm just going to welding school. I said, there's Navy welders that weld underwater right now that make $300 an hour. So there's jobs out here that are well paid if we pursue the vocational side. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for answering those questions. Our next question, we'll turn back to Tom Martin. Tom.
Okay, I'm going to try an inside-out approach this time. So, Wayne, I'll start with you. But this question will go to everyone. The district is expected to be insolvent by 2017-18 unless something changes. What solutions would you support for getting the district on solid financial footing?
And I'm to answer that in 2 minutes. There are a lot of things that need to be done. First and foremost, the new board needs to sit down and look at the expected income flow and decide how we're going to allocate our resources. And I think myself and most of the people sitting around here tonight would say that our first and foremost priority has to be allocating resources to the classroom. We're falling upon lean times, we all know that. And there is little that the board can do to control state funding, federal funding. There are, though, other income resources out there that we need to look into. There are grants available. As you talked about in the previous question, partnership with businesses. There are business partnerships that can be explored to help funding. There are program sharing things that can be pursued. There are lots of avenues to pursue to income, but most of them aren't that substantial. Ultimately, any of us elected on this board, if the finances turn out the way everybody is worried that they will, we're all going to have to sit down and work together. That's administrators, board, teachers, the community at large, local business leaders, and face head on what I think your question is getting to. And that is, are we going to have to make program cuts? Are we going to have to make staff reductions? Are we going to have to talk to our community about increasing property taxes? I hope those are things that don't need to be done. But to answer your question, these are things we're going to have to talk about, and we can't shy away from them. Finally, what can we do to help the budget situation? When we see some things have happened recently, we have to understand when it comes to income and expenditures, we have to take the attitude that every single dollar counts. There is no income source that's too little. There is no expenditure that we can say, oh, that's only $10,000, let's not worry about it. Oh, that's only $20,000, it's a drop in the bucket. This board is going to have to sit down and, like I said, take the approach, every single dollar counts.
Wayne, thank you. I wanted to follow up just briefly. You mentioned property tax increases. Is that something that you think should be on the table, as well as are there specific cuts that you think should be on the table as well?
Every revenue source has to be on the table. If we get to the point where we are worried that with whatever revenue stream we have, we cannot offer a quality education to our students, then yes, a property tax will have to be on the table to be discussed. Is this something I'd want to do? Absolutely not. I would prefer we got the money from the general state assistance that we all thought we were going to get and had budgeted for. And I'm not here to espouse and say my plan is to come in and increase the tax levy to the maximum and to instantly say let's pass a referendum. But I'm also not going to be so naive as to say in a couple years that's something I refuse to discuss. It's something we're all going to have to discuss, like I said, as a board, as administrators, and as a community at large. We're asking me to do more every day with less. And at some point, we can't shirk away from this. I mean, it's the elephant in the room that we have to address. Specific program cuts. I've not had the opportunity to examine the entire budget. If I'm a board member, that's what I'll do together with the board. If I have to make program cuts, the only thing I can say is the program cuts, my hierarchy or my priority, number one, is to fund education in the classroom. That's the last cuts I want to make. If we have to make some staff cuts, we may have to. But those will be, totally analyzed. If we have to make cuts in administration, we'll do that.
Okay, I'm going to probably have to cut you off.
In 2 minutes, I apologize.
It's a big question. Tiana Cervantes, tough decisions ahead for this school district and other school districts. What solutions do you support for getting the district on financial footing, solid financial footing?
None that are going to please everybody in the community. Speaking from a parental perspective, I've watched as the fees have gone up on our side of the table to help support education in the classroom as well as activities outside of the classroom. Activities that I believe are extremely important to a student's educational experience. And working at higher ed, I understand the importance of having those activities on their college resume or the lessons that they learn outside of the classroom that those activities help teach. So parents have made sacrifices recently with increase in fees. I've watched as the teachers made a sacrifice in the agreement that they made for their salary increase over the next few years in the contract that they made. One of the areas where I've wondered, and I'm hoping to learn if elected to the board, is where the sacrifices may have to be made on the administrative side. It's my understanding that district currently funds administrative pensions fully. That might have to be revisited. Administrative positions. When I was a student at GHS, I'll say it, 20 years ago, we didn't have as many administrative positions in our district as we do now, especially for a size of a district that we are. So that may have to be revisited. We closed Cook School a few years ago under the premise that we could not maintain it financially. We also have another school in our area that is around the same student size and teacher ratio, and that may have to be revisited too. These are hard decisions, and none of them will be made lightly. And ultimately, if we cannot do it in agreement of what's best for our students, then we're going to have to look at raising taxes. And hopefully by the time that we have that conversation, the community, those with students in the classroom and those without students in the classroom, will be able to agree that raising taxes will be the best thing for the students in this community. So I think the board has a lot of work cut out for it.
Okay, as a follow-up, since Wayne got a follow-up, I'll try to make it fair to everyone.
I don't need one, Tom.
Do you have any more specific, what else is out there that might be on the chopping block if the state doesn't come
through? I hate to use the word chopping block, because I think that the only reason it would be on the chopping block is if there's not a compelling evidence to keep it. I didn't mention this in my opening, but I am a social worker. So you can call me bleeding heart. I want the students to have the best experience they can, and I don't want to impact incomes in an already economically strapped community. But ultimately, if our goal is to keep a solvent district open, then I think we're going to have to look at making sacrifices. And so, a couple of years ago, well, maybe more than a couple of years ago, our superintendent wasn't just the superintendent. I think the superintendent was also the financial guy, right? And now we have two separate positions. We have an alternative high school, which is successful, and students are leaving that school successfully. But we also had an elementary school that was educating our students successfully on, K through fifth, and we made the decision as a community that school had to be closed. So I think that those are some of the specifics, if you want specifics, but I'm not in no way saying that those are going to be the first decisions that I make as a board member, because ultimately I want our students to know that they're the foremost important piece of this discussion.
Okay, thank you. Philip Slayton, what solutions would you support for improving the financial condition of District 205?
Ultimately, I think the state is going to be the person that the entity that we have to put on the board for paying more money to the students. And I'm sure that right now that they're under a lot of pressure to do that. So I would encourage people to try to talk to their legislators, including leadership in the schools and mayors of the towns, to do that. Additionally, I think they're trying to pass this, or maybe have passed this bill, that allows some of the money that goes to the Chicago schools to be filtered down to the downstate schools, which if that happens, then that's going to help a lot of these towns that don't have a lot of tax base, but they have, but the state's going to be able to support the school better in that manner. So the other thing too, I've had parents come to me here lately and they've been saying, what can I buy for you in your classroom that will help you teach better? So I think there's money out there from people if they feel like that their money's going in the right direction. And sometimes the tax collector doesn't spend the money as good as he takes it in. So I think there's ways of maybe integrating the parents into helping out in the school some. I don't think that they're going to provide all the money we need, but they can provide some. And I know some of them want to do that. As far as programs with the schools itself, I'm kind of like everybody else. I think you're going to have to investigate every single expenditure and say, is this being effective? If it's not being effective, then we can do away with it. I know there's going to be a lot of grumbling about that, but it's something that you're just going to have to take the responsibility and say, this is the best choice and stick by your choice, because this is not something you're going to have to be wishy-washy on. It's going to have to make a decision and go ahead with your plan.
And what about a property tax increase? Is that something that you think will have to be considered?
I think presently, with the economic situation in this city being the way it is, we are not part of the national recovery, we're not as great a recoverer right now as we'd like to be. So I think there's a shortage of money, but it's getting better. And I think if economic times get a little better, you may be able to go and ask the community for a raise. in the property tax. But I think we have to be careful about that because, you know, we don't want to take too much. And what I want to guarantee is if I want to go ask for a property tax increase, I want to be able to guarantee them that I'm going to use their money as carefully as I can to make sure that it's spent appropriately. So, and that's, again, reviewing the programs and looking at what you have. I don't have any magic cures, I don't think, but I believe just careful review would be the thing I would want to do, and look at what I can do away with, and look at what I have to keep.
Okay, thank you very much, and we'll just go on around the circle. Maury Lyon, what would you support in terms of? Yeah, I know I threw you a little bit, Maury. This is kind of a curveball here. So what would you support in terms of cuts or property tax increase or?
So I get all as one question. Then.
Yeah.
So I don't get. I'm not in the 4-minute plan then.
You can be on the 4-minute plan.
Okay.
Especially if you don't answer it in the first two.
Okay. Well, obviously there's not enough funds for what we're doing right now. That's a given. So we need to figure out what we want to do. You gave me time for a story then. My second year in the district, we had a deficit. And I remember the superintendent bringing all the principals together and saying we had a major deficit, and he wanted us to all sit around the table and give him recommendations to bring to the board the following week. It's exactly how you shouldn't be doing it. First of all, the amount of cuts at that time was an order of magnitude lower than we're talking about now. I think we're talking about like $150,000 worth of cuts. And everyone sat around the table, and we broke up into little groups, and we talked. And what happened as a part of that result, programs were cut which weren't represented at the table, which didn't have a voice at the table. And that's not how things should happen. We need to have decisions on programs being made based on what's good for the entire district. I mean, I remember the elementary people were all talking about, we'd make sure we keep the art specials program. Someone else was talking about, that's not how, it's a unit district. We need to make decisions for everyone. Okay. In schools, you hear a lot about data-driven decisions. We need data-driven decisions. But you can't get good data on effectiveness unless we know what we're supposed to be, what the output is. For example, and here we have installed, more than 10 years ago, the block sits at this high school. We put in a lot of new classes in place. We have not evaluated if it's been effective. It's effective in having more classes available for students, but is it effective for students? Or maybe the parameters of the discussion on effectiveness haven't even been determined. So across the board, we need to look at all of our programs, determine what the outputs are supposed to be, and set up some sort of evaluation tool for program evaluation. Program evaluation has a place, and schools haven't done a good job of doing it. We have people who attempt to protect their fiefdoms and fight pretty well for them, when in fact, as a unit district, we need to make decisions on what's effective for the children, discard what's not effective, or maybe not discard, maybe figure out how to do it in a less costly manner. Any cost cutting will take place in programs. Everything else, yes, we can copy on two sides of paper, but after the first year, there's no savings anymore. Hopefully everyone's already copying on two sides of paper. I haven't answered your other part of the question, and that is, would I be in favor of a tax increase? As I speak to the current finance person, he says, there's no way around it without a tax increase. I think we can put off that day a few years through some surgical assessment and then resultant cuts. There has to be some place still in the district where there are cuts. Is there $1.5 million worth of cuts, right? The first year, probably not. But just like a household, you don't have enough money, you spend down your savings for a while to figure out, while you're cutting up the credit cards, what you have to do. Right now, we're at the district, we're cutting up credit cards, we're spending down some savings, but at the same time, we need to figure out going forward. Do we need to take that second job, which would mean a tax increase? And I think Mr. Slayton spoke on the point, we need to make sure that the other players in public education, both the feds and the state, can't use education as a political football and not fund it the way they've promised to fund it. Okay. That's outside the scope of board
meeting. I am going to have to shut you off. I don't know how many minutes that was, but... I defer to the timekeeper. Jean Ann Glasnovich, what would you support in terms of getting the district on financial footing, strong financial footing?
Something Wayne mentioned reminded me of a comment after the strike when they were talking about the 6 days and how much that was going to save. We talked about losing the state aid, and then, well, that's going to be saved by the teacher salary that we're not going to be paying, and it's basically a wash. That made me cringe, because like Wayne said, you know, every dollar counts, and pretty soon you add up $1,000 here, $1,000 there, you've got enough maybe to, you know, keep a para or keep a teacher's aide in the school district. So unfortunately, Illinois funding is not going to be reliable, so we have to kind of operate under the assumption that we're going to receive less than we really deserve and be thrilled if we get close to what we deserve. The board and the superintendent, I think, are going to have to sit down and go over the budget, expenditures and revenues with a fine-tooth comb together, go over everything. I would hope the cuts could be made without putting an additional burden on the classroom resources. I agree with Wayne that that's what we're here for, is to educate our kids and to improve their achievement. As our newly hired superintendent has said, we will be doing more with less, then that means we need to look at all areas, including central office administration and staffing and budget in that area as a potential for savings. I was really encouraged to see that our new superintendent was strong in finance, because I was hopeful that that's great. We could go back to the days of Ron Cope when we had the superintendent in there who was a financial guru as well as, you know, a manager otherwise. And so I would have hoped that we could get by without having to hire a business manager, which would save for thousands of dollars. And if he could use his expertise in that area, and that it would not be necessary, and that would be one place where maybe we could look at some savings. If we have to go, and it should become apparent at some point in time that we're going to go to the public and ask for more tax dollars from them, then we may better make darn sure that we've done our homework and that we have laid out to the community that we've been transparent and let them know that we've exhausted every other possible avenue before we do that.
Sorry, that's time for that particular question, unless you had a follow-up, Tom.
Just why don't you go ahead and finish your statement there, because I did.
Even in times of financial constraints, we must keep in mind that our number one priority is the student's education, and our financial situation and funding from the state must be viewed as a challenge and not as an excuse not to provide the education for our students. And that's the way I would leave it.
Okay, thank you. I pushed us a little bit over on time here. Amy Pickerel, what solutions would you support?
I believe that by taking the first step and running for school board, I think that's the first step for me personally on what I can learn about and what can be done about the district's financial situation. Obviously, the schools in Illinois, the funding needs to be addressed for the long-term stability of the school district because of the crisis and because of the way schools are funded. I think we are going to be forced to make impossible choices that lower not only the quality of education, but the class sizes. We've been forced to close a school. If we have to eliminate teacher positions, eliminate support services, those are all things that need to be looked at, as well as extracurricular and athletic options for students. And while these do possibly save money, they do come at the cost of a quality education, which again goes back to the unfavorable part. Taxes, of course, it has to be looked at, but as does everything, again, learn more as you go and find out. And that's the benefit of having a school board and not just rely on the shoulders of one individual, is to have a school board with different opinions and different views and trying to work together for the positive outcome for the students.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, that concludes our questions for the evening. Time flies when you're having fun. And so now we come to the part where we've got closing comments from our candidates. Again, I just want to thank you all for being here this evening. And we will begin back here over with Maury. So Maury, your closing 2 minutes.
Okay, first of all, I am a write-in candidate, so make sure you spell my name correctly. Okay, but it's real important that we take these jobs seriously. I mean, we sit of seven people helping manage a $45 million budget with over 1,000 employees. We're the third largest employer in the area. We need to manage it well. We need to work with the administrative staff well. And we make sure that they understand that we're not here to rubber stamp their opinions, that we're here to work together to do that. I believe the background I have in schools provides me with the ability to be a good board member, because I understand the processes going into the input provided to the board. In my introduction, I didn't say a little bit more about myself. While I've been here, I worked in the district for 25 years. I started my teaching as a third grade teacher in Chicago, so I had the experience in Chicago. I taught in Northern Arizona. I was an administrator two other places before coming here. And after working in those places, that's why we stayed in Galesburg. It's a nice place. It's a good place for children. We on the school board need to assure that it maintains a good educational setting to attract and keep families. We spoke the vocational piece. We don't know what the jobs are going to be 10 years from now. The jobs that our students, when I read to the preschoolers on Wednesday, when they finish high school in 14 years, the jobs aren't going to be the same ones they see now. So we need to prepare students for jobs that don't exist. And as a board, we need to have the creativity to offer programs to our teachers so that those positions for the future are available for our children. Thank you.
Thank you. Jean Ann Glasnovich, 2 minutes.
Thank you. I also am a write-in candidate, so I want to make sure you spell my name right. And I've got a little card that's got it on there. So a single board member has only one vote, as I think I mentioned before, and boards of education make decisions based upon majority rule. So any single member must do their due diligence and must educate themselves on the issues and use their ability to persuade and articulate and convince other members that her reasoning is most sound. Sometimes you're able to convince them and sometimes you're not. But everybody needs to remember that the number one priority is what's best for the students' education and to improve the achievement of the students in our schools. I've had a lot of experience facilitating, as I said before, in mediating situations. I'm good at listening and respecting other persons' perspectives and weighing options and hopefully guiding people toward the best choices. One more thing, there are good people running for this opportunity to be on the board and try to change things and to improve things and move forward. But I hope no one is expecting any miracles here, because we didn't get where we're at overnight, and we're not going to get where we want to be overnight either. But the pledge that I would make is that to make decisions to keep the well-being and the education of the students always is the number one priority, to work on fostering positive communication among all the stakeholders and cultivating a mutual respect among the administration, the teachers, and the community. And so I appreciate this opportunity to speak my piece. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Amy Pickrell, 2 minutes.
I'm running for school, but as a parent. I'm running for not just my children, but the children of the district. I appreciate and have the utmost respect for my children's teachers in the short years we've been there. I respect them, and I know they love my children, and I want to do the best for everyone involved. That includes the friend of mine who doesn't want to pay more taxes for children that he doesn't have in the district. I want to try and be a communicative voice that listens and hopefully helps our district. I'm optimistic and excited for the new superintendent. I believe that, like with anything new might take some time, but with time, hopefully we have positive education experience for the students in District 205.
Thank you. Wayne Statham,
2 minutes for your closing.
Thank you. I think what Jean Ann said is probably about as profound a thing as anybody said tonight or will say tonight, and that is the situation we find ourselves in, we didn't get here overnight, and we're not going to get where we want to go overnight. I don't think any of us could have said that better. My concern and why I'm running is I don't think we're going to get there at all unless we change the culture of District 205. And I think that's why most of us tonight are running. I think that's the primary purpose that most of us stepped forward, is there's got to be a culture change. We have got to change the culture of District 205 to a culture of openness, collaboration, mutual respect, and transparency. There is no way we're going to get where we want to go unless we make that culture change. We all join together, all the stakeholders in this, board, administrators, teachers, paraprofessionals, students, parents, and the community at large. We've got an opportunity now. We've got 4 new members on the school board. We have a new superintendent. We've got an opportunity for a fresh start to actually do that, to make this a place where teachers want to teach, where parents feel good about sending their kids, where the community feels good, if they can, about paying taxes when they see how much they are paying in property taxes. We came together on the penny sales tax. At that moment, we did bring the community together. It shows it can be done, and I think it can be done. And that's the main thing I want to accomplish here. I don't have all the answers for which programs should be cut and what needs to be cut. I don't have all the answers for the perfect revenue sources. But I know I'm willing to address those challenges, and I'm willing to try to bring together all the stakeholders in this game. Listen to them, consider their opinions, value their input, and together make these decisions we have to make to make this the kind of school district we want to offer the education to the children that we want to offer. And again, that's why we're all here. Thank you.
Thank you. Tiana Cervantes, 2 minutes.
The road forward is not going to be easy. And for those who know me in the community, know that if I'm not anything, I am a little forthcoming in the way that I approach things. And I think that's what I would bring to the board, is that open communication and that transparency, because I think that one of the reasons why our community is still hurting after the events of this past year is that we still feel there are a lot of questions that are unanswered, and that decisions that have been made in the past several years, there's just a lot of questions around decisions, timelines. I know I do as a parent of a student in this district, and that's what brought me to run. I want to improve that communication. I want to improve the knowledge that our community has about the decisions that the board ultimately makes. And I want the input of the community, because these are the tax dollars. Whether you're a parent of a student or a non-parent, if we're going to have to move forward and at all discuss a possibility of raising taxes in order to keep our district solvent, then you have to know that the 7 people sitting on that board are going to make the decisions to use your money the most wisely, cost-effectively, and efficiently possible, that's going to afford your student or your neighbor's student the best education possible. And that's why I'm running, so that hopefully I am a member that can be honest and open, even if you might not like my answer, because ultimately we have about 27,000 people in our community, and I'm not going to be able to please every single one of you. But at least you'll know where I'm coming from, and you'll know that I'm honest in what I'm presenting to you.
Thank you. And Philip Slayton, 2 minutes for your closing.
I have 5 educators in my family, myself, my wife, 2 sisters-in-law, a brother-in-law, and my father. So I'm interested in education. And so I want this district to be effective. I want it to provide the education that we know we can give our kids. And I think some of the things that have happened here, like with the hiring of Ralph Grimes as our superintendent, I think he's an excellent choice, and I think he's a guy that we can work with. Additionally, in the last 18 years, I've negotiated 3 contracts with the schools that I've taught in, and we've always done it in a respectful way, and we've been able to satisfy the contract for both sides and do it so that everybody was happy and nobody fought over it. So I think I have the temperament and the experience necessary to adjudicate some of the problems that's going to be part of the district. I think I also am familiar with tax dollars, because when I was in the Navy, we were spending money on submarines that came from tax dollars. And I always respected the idea that people were throwing out their money to make sure they were protected. And it's so I don't think I'm going to spend money here irresponsibly. In addition to that, I don't really care who gets voted in on the school board. I mean, I don't want to say I don't want to be voted in. I'm just saying whoever gets voted in, I think it's just imperative that those people decide to work in a cohesive, mutually respectful manner so that we get things done and we get it done with the least amount of hassle and the least amount of money spent.
Thank you. Well, this concludes our candidate forum for this evening. I want to thank the candidates for being here tonight. I want to thank again the Register Mail and WGIL for co-sponsoring. I'd like to invite those that are listening and watching to tune back in tomorrow night at 7 p.m., where we will be having our candidate forum for candidates running for city council. And most importantly, don't forget to vote on Tuesday, April the 7th. If you need any information on sample ballots or who's running or anything like that, please stop by the Galesburg City Hall, and there's plenty of information here for you. So with that, thank you again. Have a wonderful evening, and hopefully see you tomorrow night. Good night.